Air and Angels, written by Susan Hill and read by Sean Baker.
Prologue. The river was crowded, and the lawns that sloped down to the river. There were young people everywhere, and the sun shone, as it properly should on such a scene, as it shines in stories, sparkled on the water and on the upturned young faces and the parasols, for parasols were once again in fashion. And then, suddenly, there was a stir in the midst of it all, where the crowd was thickest, and some of the young men raised a boat high, high above their heads, to a great shout, "Hurrah! Rah! Rah!" And water cascaded out of it onto their heads and shoulders and down their arms in a brief silver stream. The crowd parted to let them through, and they advanced slowly up the lawn in triumph. What precisely the triumph was, or whose, he could not be sure, for there had been so much noise and confusion, so many people, such a succession of triumphs, all that long, hot, golden afternoon. For years, all the young men had looked alike to him, and he knew none of them any more. They blurred together with his memories of the young men of the past. Though at least they stood still in age now, at least they no longer seemed, as they once had, to be becoming disconcertingly younger and younger, until he had feared they might turn into small children, and then to babies, and so finally disappear backwards altogether. But they had remained simply boys, though they were young men in their own eyes, and perhaps that was all that counted. Then, standing half inside the entrance to the marquee, but looking out onto the throng on the lawn and the crowded river, for a moment he panicked, clutching a cup of tea and a bowl of strawberries, quite alone, seeing no familiar face among so many. He wandered a few paces into the undersea light of the tent's interior, where they sat in groups at small green tables that were set too closely together, and where the heat and the steam from the tea urns and the babbling voices seemed to rise and hover in a dense, visible cloud just above their heads. He fled and collided with others, pushing in through the doorway, and stopped, panicking again, trying to clutch onto the sense of his own identity and his reason for being here. And then, in trying to rescue his bowl of strawberries and steady himself by raising his cup to take a sip of tea, the tea spilled and slopped over, and the saucer somehow spun out of his hand onto the grass. So he waited and let the crowd swirl around him, and gradually he felt calmer and knew once again why he was here, as he had been here every May week of his adult life, though he was still entirely surrounded by strangers. There were so few left who were not. And out of a painted sky the sun shone and shone. But he was known to them, or at least to some. They saw an old man who had once been handsome and was still tall and upright, still had a full head of hair springing up thickly, though entirely white. For although it was more than 30 years ago, before any of these young men and women were so much as born, the story, or at any rate a public version of it, was known and remembered, and sometimes alluded to, had become one of the legends of the place. So, milling about on the lawn, looking down to the river, on their way in or out of the marquee for the tea and strawberries, some whispered his name to one another. "Thomas Cavendish, the Reverend Thomas Cavendish. Did you never hear?" On the other side of the lawns, Georgiana caught sight of him, lost him as the crowd milled around, then saw him again as he shambled forwards, an old man who had spilled his tea and was being jostled. And a sudden dart of the purest anguish struck her through the heart, so that she all but cried out loud at the pain of seeing him as he was, and thinking that she had not wanted him to come to this, had wanted something quite other for him, had dreamed of... But... glancing up and catching sight of him again, she saw too how fine a figure he still was, and how the shadow of his former handsomeness lay over him, and for a few seconds then saw him not as her only brother on this May week afternoon, not in time at all, but timelessly, as an immortal.